Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dive In, the podcast. I'm Christian.
Oh, hey, Ruby. I'm Jessica. I'm glad to see Ruby. That makes me happy.
Yeah, my dog, my old girl dog, Ruby. She's 13. She can't hear, she can't see, but she's still a baby.
She's had a rough go lately, but
yeah,
I mean, maybe that's a segue, right?
That's right. So here we are. This is Friday after the election. You know, Jess and I are, I mean, there's so many words, right? Where to begin? And, you know, so election night, for those of us in the biz, election day is weird because we, you know, it's like this weird purgatory. And jump in here, Jess, if you got a better word.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Super Bowl, but you're not watching it. You're just like driving past polling locations, calling people to say, how are you feeling? And it's all the same. You know, oh, turnout's high.
Yeah, because everybody's, you know, you're kind of in your own bubble and people want to be positive. I mean, because remember, this campaigns are grueling processes. And especially in this moment, in this environment, right? So. Yeah. So, you know, everybody, I mean, it's human nature to be positive. And so.
Yeah. And I said, I went out to lunch with a colleague of mine. And, you know, I was like, right now we have the option to have optimism, right? We should be optimistic. There's no reason that we've seen that we shouldn't be optimistic.
That's right. And again, you know, those of us in the biz, especially those of us who've been in the biz a long time, like Jess and I, you know, you try not to bury your head in the sand. In other words, you try to see reality.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're humans.
Yeah.
And, you know, so anyway, so election day came and went, which is, like I said, some weird purgatory. It's just like this waiting game. And so then, you know, 7 p.m. on East Coast about is when polls start closing on the East Coast, the first wave, if you will.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of decent, you know, swing states in that, you know, time frame. But so, you know, results come in and, you know, it's kind of looking typical. In other words, no surprises. But I'm going to tell you, and I want Jess to tell her version of this, if she had one. When I knew something was wrong. Now, I'm a Floridian. I've probably mentioned that. And, you know, Florida is, I still think it's pretty swing. I know that it feels very red right now for obvious reasons, but it's not Texas. Now, if you looked at Texas and Florida right now and you broke down the vote, you'd be like, they're the same.
Yeah.
I personally don't believe that Florida's Texas, but that's another conversation. But I thought.
But also, you spend a lot of time in Florida.
Yes, I do.
Your daughter goes to school in Florida. When I've been to Miami, I text you and I say, I can't believe that. You know, it's like hard to. Also, you spend all your time in northern Florida.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time
around
Tallahassee. Like, it's hard when you know people to say, oh, this is where we are. But
yes,
anyway.
Correct.
So I understand. I live in Iowa, for God's sake.
That's right. And so for example, you know, everybody was watching Florida, not because they thought that Kamala was going to win necessarily. They thought that it could be a little bit more competitive because of the abortion referendum.
Yeah.
And so just really quickly, the abortion referendum did not pass because it needed, it was 60% threshold, which is tough for anything to pass. Let's just be honest. Okay.
Yep.
But it came really close. It was 58%. Okay. So, and as you would imagine, these referendums are they're written to be kind of confusing and all that. So, you know, so there's all that. So my point is that I thought it would be more competitive. So Florida was called pretty quickly because Florida.
I mean, like what, 703 or whatever?
Yeah.
Like it was like.
Because Florida, they you know, they don't have any of these crazy state laws that you can't count early vote or whatever until this particular time. They can count early vote as it comes in.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, so also they just count really fast and all that. So when they called Florida for Trump and the gap was like 10 points, I was like, no.
Right.
No.
Right.
So that was my moment. Now, it wasn't that moment in reality where I was like, it's over.
Yeah.
It was just in the back of my mind. I was like, no. So did you have a moment like that?
Well, I'll double back a little bit because mm-hmm. we had this conversation. The Des Moines Register came out with a poll saying that Kamala was up here 3 points. I've been working on a project where we had some internal polling, and we're focused on state legislative races more than anything else, at least what I was working on here. And in those legislative target trackers that happened in September, October, you know, reflected the polling that she had. We had a poll, you know, earlier in the fall that showed kind of similar to her poll before, which had Kamala 3 down. So, like, I was sort of like dinging the bell, but in my mind, what I thought was Kamala's strong here. That's going to help these either the legislative and targeted congressional races, which we had two here in the first and third district, would push her up, or that was helping push them up. Like, hard to tell. So it was all very close here in all that polling. I'm not saying that the legislative races were all close, because that's not what was happening. There was a lot of spending happening on the Republican side. They just had way more money than we did. So we knew that there was going to be some bad news and good news, right? Likely. So funny enough, you know, I talked to somebody who I know who works in the Polk County Auditor's Office, and I wasn't doing a race. He was focused on the race, and it was a county supervisor race in a targeted county in Polk County. Okay, this is very like inside.
Yes.
He was a former state legislator moving over, and I had been sort of helping him track the spending in the race. And there was no mm-hmm. spending. Maybe there was mail, but digital or TV or anything. She hadn't done any. The Democrat had. And I was looking to see where he was. And for whatever reason, again, not even a client, right? But I was looking to see mm-hmm. where he was, and he had lost.
Mm.
And that's when I knew that it was, and that was at 8? 8:30 maybe? 9? And I'm like, this is going to be bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and like, that you was knew. Like, because you're like, oh, if you're in the suburbs and we live in a state that has a 6-week or less abortion ban, and we ran on the abortion ban, we ran on our education being privatized, and we ran on corporate greed and sort of like how, you know, corporations are dealing with inflation and how, you know, people are bought off, that kind of like a sort of messaging. That was the best test in information messaging that we had, and they all did it. And then we watched some of our targeted races where we were on par on spending and we were behind.
Right.
So then you think in an extrapolation of what's happening, and I was not bellwether, mm-hmm. but then when I was getting texts and it's like everything's below, and what was very confusing. And maybe we're talking a little bit too much about this, but 2020, as a reminder, was an almost exclusively male,
yes,
M-A-I-L state.
Yes.
Election.
Right.
Unprecedented turnout. So what we're seeing is like lower turnouts, but Trump 2 points ahead in places that we should have been 2 points ahead, or
mm-hmm.
the numbers weren't high enough because the turnout wasn't high enough, where people keep saying, why was the turnout lower and why wasn't she doing this? But the reality is that the turnout was always going to be lower than 2020.
Sure.
And she had to, you know, we did not see, the polls did not reflect the same consequences that happened in 2016. And we were blindsided. And
yes.
It was ridiculous.
Right.
There's probably a lot of reasons for that we can go into. I think the takeaway that I have is that, and we can get into the takeaway in the future, is that sexism, racism, homophobic is okay, that we're tribal.
Yes.
We're national, we're nationalized, and we can hide. It could be true, or we could hide behind that our eggs cost too much. And that's a very privileged point of view, I understand. And it's very real. And so I give the people who were, you know, have high level concern for the price of things, you know, but it's just, it doesn't add up. Gas prices don't cost as much.
Right.
There's pain, there's economic pain. But I think some of the economic pain is in direct contrast to not wanting to be led by a woman and not wanting to be led by a woman of color.
Yes.
And, you know, we can go back and look at 2016 and say, oh, all these things. And, you know, there's hand wringing. I think there's a general, the interesting thing, there's just sort of a general understanding that they're going to place blame, Biden, whatever. And that's all fine. And maybe true. I don't know. But we had more money. We had more momentum.
Yes.
We had more energy. We had a candidate that was, you know, did an amazing job.
Yes.
And it did not matter.
Did not matter. Now,
so I don't know what the, you know, I don't know what the future is, but I would say that, like, we have to have either a reconciliation about our view, you know, or just understand that this is who we are and these are not safe times.
Right. That's true. And that is the takeaway, right? Because I think what you said is true. And as these things go, as operatives, that's what we do. We do a lot of hand-wringing right after and be like, what happened? What happened? What happened? And it takes a little time to gather all the info, right? I mean, it takes a lot of time to do that. And then we kind of assess. Now, but let's speak in broad strokes right now because that's all we have. But yes, I mean, I think that a lot of it was sexism. And we've talked a lot about sexism on this podcast. And it's not just about whether or not they feel like a woman can lead or a woman of color can lead. And by the way, as Democrats, we knew that that was going to be a challenge. Okay? We knew that. And I would go out on a limb and say that if anybody but Trump was on the ballot, it probably would have been a bigger void, a bigger margin in terms of a Republican victory. I know that's hard to imagine.
That's really sad, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now we can, let's set that aside a minute because we can talk about that. And I have many thoughts, but you know, the thing that I keep going back to, and again, we've discussed this on this podcast, so we don't have to get into it a lot, but it's not necessarily, I mean, I understand on some level, understand, recognize, whatever you want to call it, the sexism. It's hard. And I know, Jess, that you have heard me say, I think this country will not they'll elect a gay man before they elect a woman. Now, I always hope I'm wrong about that. I really hope I'm wrong about that, but that's what I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. We sit here, and so if you want an example, we talk about Pete Buttigieg or someone, you know, who is in the LGBTQ community, and which is, by the way, they're also afraid. I mean,
yes,
and they have a right to
they
be
should
afraid.
Be.
I've heard from a lot of my friends who are married, who are worried about their marriage.
Yeah.
And they should be.
They should be. Yes.
And so are there quiet things that happen? Like, you know, people start figuring out how to do, you know, legal back issues to make, you know, back whatever.
Yes.
To make sure that they have a right of, you know, health and finance or whatever probably start happening. But anyway. Yeah. So yes, I think that's right. But, and I think, not to any detriment or positivity, but I think to, you know, a gay man, but the reality is like you say, you know, sexism is the mother of all isms. I think there's a lot of people that agree with that. I do think that there has to be an understanding of cultures Yes. Especially because I think one of the saddest things that happened in this election was this promulgation of information that Black men were voting for Trump. And there's no, in fact, the exit poll showed that Black men pretty much voted on the same level for Kamala as they did. So the divisiveness just in the rhetoric is like rhetoric. So, but the reality is in, I would say in the progressive movement, people do not understand the Hispanic Latino vote. I think we have to understand that there are levels of, you know, misunderstanding for us. I think it all has to do with like, they would feel this way about immigration reform, which is a very white lens. They would feel this way about women, which is a very wrong lens. Like, we just don't have an understanding. We think, okay, you come to this country, we don't separate your families. We embrace you. We educate, you know, we try to pull education in. We try to make sure.
Try to give you health care, access to health care.
We want you in this country. We think you being in this country is a fabric of what we need to do. Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of privilege here. You take jobs and we'll do jobs that we won't, you know, a lot of white people don't want to do or whatever. And this is all true. But that there is a hierarchical, you know, structure in every culture. And what we saw with Latino men, I think we started seeing it before during the election, but didn't fully grasp what happened until we saw. And it sort of makes sense. I don't understand culturally as much, but I also think that our messaging is just, it doesn't reflect, because we say, I think we talked about this yesterday. We say we want to give you an education. We want, you know, we want to help you with ESL. We want to help, you know, do all these things. And it just looks like a handout. You know, that.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so any of our economic policies don't seem to be reflective in people's minds. And perhaps it is grocery bill. It could be, but I don't think it's. I think the grocery bill is easy to say.
Yeah, I think the grocery bill, the economic policy or whatever it is a justification for something else. You know, you and I have talked about
this. I was listening to a podcast. You know, I tell you, I walked the dogs. I was listening to a podcast. They were interviewing white women. I think I didn't get to white women yet. They were interviewing white women and they said, Donald Trump calls Kamala Harris stupid. He says this sexual assault stuff of other women. He says, we don't care. We want cheaper eggs.
Yeah.
And, white and women.
So
white women know that they have it pretty good and some don't.
Yeah. And.
But and, there's a lot of influence on their lives as well.
Yes. And, you know, so I, you know, I hear something like that and I was like, that's not why they're voting for Trump. There's some other reason that they would rather not say out loud. Or even admit to themselves, probably on some level, as why they're doing it. And now I think that, you know, as you know, as I've said often on this podcast, is that the hate against women was off the charts.
Yeah.
And I go back to, we all know it's there, but to be so blatant with it, and, you know, and it's like, are we just supposed to sit here and take that? I guess so.
I think so. I mean, I think, well, or otherwise we've been taking it and not realizing it.
Right. You know? I mean, yes. I mean, obviously, but it's like, you know, I guess this is the new, what, you know, like it. So the new normal now is you can call a woman of color on a national stage a whore and it's okay.
Yep. And so what do we say to our kids? Look,
yeah.
I'm going to tell you, I'm not parenting well through this. It's hard for me to tell my 7-year-old to be kind. She said to me the other day, and I know you know this, but she said, do you wish Donald Trump would just be kind? I said, I do. I just wish he would be kind. But you know what? Do you hate Donald Trump? What do you say to that to a 7-year-old? You're like, right. I don't hate anyone. But, oh, it's really hard to say Donald Trump wants to create an environment for you that is not safe.
Yes.
He wants to take your ability away to have education. He does not want you to go to college or go to any environment that says, oh, there's a systemic racist issue with our society and you need a safe space. He wants to take that away.
Right.
Even a safe space. They're taking away all DI issues in our colleges because the regents passed that, because the state did. What happens? At Iowa State University, the Gay Alliance chapter, I'm not sure what they call themselves, they can't have a room that's paid for by ISU.
Yes.
So they can't feel safe. And by the way, some of these people are coming from rural communities. They've never been in an environment where they were safe. And this is where they felt safe. They didn't have friends. And then they could find friends.
Yeah.
And that's gone.
Yes. And so, you know, as these things
go. But why do we care? Like, why don't they care about that? Why don't they care about people? Well, why are we so individualistic?
Yes.
And also, like, can I bring this up? I want to talk about this.
Okay.
When Bezos stepped in to stop the Washington Post from doing the endorsement, I think that's when a little bit Democrats woke up on a little bit of the corporate influence on. I think the left has been doing this for a long time, but the right has no interest, right, in like the media at all. And you live it. So then you fast forward to Elon Musk says, we're not losing. Elon Musk is worth $280 billion.
Yes.
If he spent $80 billion on this election, which he did not, he would have $200 billion. It's more money than any of us can ever fathom. And we don't have that on the progressive side. We have some very rich people, right? Yes. And I'm not saying our politics should be run by very rich people, but I'm just saying, like, there's no holes barred anymore. He doesn't care. We're going to run up tariffs. Talk about this, right? We're going to round him up. We're going to have a national abortion ban. We're going to, like, and people are like, oh, he's not going to do all that. He is. He's probably going to have the House.
Yes.
And he's definitely going to have the Senate.
Yes.
All the 08, 06ers, which we, you know, all gone for the most
except
part. Maybe Amy's.
Amy's, I think, the survivor. Yeah.
I mean, so then you say, okay, then let's get into that maybe a little bit. But then you say, where do you go in the United States if your family doesn't look, by the way, reflects mostly what all the other families do. But, you know, if your family isn't in the privileged white sector, where do you go?
Right. Where do you go? And so let's talk about, before we move on, is like where the House and Senate stand, because that hasn't been completely resolved. So right now, first of all, every Senate race, this is an interesting tidbit. So every Senate race in the battlegrounds or statewide, okay, so like in North Carolina, it was the governor race. The Democrat won, except in Pennsylvania. Now, we're still counting in Pennsylvania. It's not been declared. I think AP finally declared Casey has been defeated.
Lost.
Yeah. Because of the votes that's still out are, you know, so, and they're doing the normal stuff, which is they're, you know, whatever, trying to challenge every vote and, you know,
right.
They're in that space. There will probably be an automatic recount. So all that to say, and neither side's going to give up. So that could go on a while.
Okay.
When I say a while, excuse me, a while, I mean like a couple weeks. Anyway, the House. So yes, excuse me, just because of the calendar, we always knew this. We knew it was a tough calendar for Democrats. So like John Tester lost, Sherrod Brown lost. Who, by the way, Sherrod Brown.
Jeez, man. I mean, devastating. I mean, here's the thing. Sherrod Brown exuded the fight, Tom Harkin, the old school populist, always for
the working
person, no matter who you are, always showed up, was always there. He was a, we have very, let's be honest, we have very different Senate members who approach things very differently. If there's anyone that approached sort of this populist, economic messaging that Trump's done so well on. It was Sherrod.
Yeah.
In the right way. Right.
Right. No, right. No, absolutely.
And, like, didn't matter.
And Bernie Moreno,
yeah,
his opponent, the senator-elect in Ohio, he was the guy that said, I think, on, you know, one of these radio shows, whatever, that he didn't understand why older women cared about abortion because we were all dried up. And speaking right. as one of those women that are as all dried up, right. I sure care about the issue. So
it's hard and like, look, we talked about this too, and I don't know how much you want to get into it, but you know, your daughter is her first presidential, and
yeah,
there was like a friend down the street who stopped me on a walk, and it was her daughter's first presidential, and it's like,
yeah, right. And they get hit with all this anti-woman stuff.
And what do you say? So what are you saying to them?
Right.
What are you saying to them?
Right. And
you know, Genevieve, who's 7 again, says, you know, it's like Zach Nunn, who ran against the congressional, doesn't care about women's rights.
Yes.
These people don't care about women.
Yes, they don't.
She will grow up knowing that the president that from 7 to 12 years old doesn't care about black people. And doesn't care about women.
Right, right. Because
in fact, when I say doesn't care about them, I'm being generous.
Yes, that's right. You are. And so that's the Senate. Let's go back to this. So the House. The House. So I guess that'll give, like, it'll be a slim margin, but it'll be a, like, there'll be like 53 Republicans to, you know, whatever, 47 Dems, right? Something like that. Okay.
In the Senate. 53-47, something like that.
Yeah. So, but
Jackie Rosen won. Sherrod lost. Casey maybe. Where else are
Alyssa
we?
Slotkin.
Slotkin won.
Tammy Baldwin.
Baldwin's now listen, winning.
So this, yeah. So this is an interesting thing about Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, this is a little data point that I thought was interesting. In Wisconsin specifically, there were many people who showed up and voted for Trump only.
Yeah, and didn't go down the thing. Yeah. So basically that gave Tammy Baldwin an opportunity to win. It wasn't like there's Trump Baldwin voters on a large scale.
Right.
It was because they only want to come vote for Trump, which is that there's a silent polling situation.
Yes.
There's a silent support.
Yes.
That people don't want to talk, that say they're voting for him, but are.
That's right. Right. And, so, right. Right.
And they showed up. And so when we would talk about this, Christian would be like, oh, thank, because there was a point, right? We've talked about this ad nauseum where I said, you said, we said, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say I because everybody's saying it. It is a strategy.
Yes.
He's trying to get these people out to vote because otherwise, you would stop him from doing that in fear that, like, he would alienate the women or he would alienate. But it was a strategy. Yeah,
it was a strategy, which
and
I thought.
And it won. And
it was very risky, but it won.
Because you were like, look, these, for years and years in politics, it was a high turnout. It meant that Democrats who normally don't show up, showed up. Now, if it's a high turnout, it means young men or men in general who don't normally show up are showing up and they're supporting Trump.
Right.
They're showing up for Trump and they're motivated
by
this disgusting, ugly language.
Right.
Because
they're motivated by a pro-woman perceived agenda. They want to stop it.
I mean, and or they're motivated by saying, you know, we're done with people who aren't, you know, white, rural, whatever it is. We are going to make sure that you stay up here and these other people. I know that light, is that light driving you crazy?
Yeah, well, I just don't know where it's coming from. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's okay. Christian, for those of you who are listening, Christian has a light that's like, and maybe it's like a sign that, you know, we're on the right path. I don't know. No, I don't know. If you're watching this, you'll see it, but it's kind of driving her crazy, but it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. So, So the House. So the way California, because it's all mail-in, the way California counts votes is that they will take anything that's even postmarked up to November 12th.
Oh, wow. So we're going to be waiting for a while on
right,
that.
And yes, but right now, so there weren't any big, huge surprises on the House side. There were some very competitive races in New York State that Democrats won. And we can sit here and talk about that. But in California, there's some very competitive ones as well. And it's going to be a little while, or it's going to be a couple more days before we figure that out. But right now, there's a solid possibility that Republicans maintain or they win the House. Now, it's going to be a super small margin.
Yeah.
Probably smaller than it was before.
Like enough to, how is the speaker thing going to happen? I mean, right. I don't even have to go into that, but it's going to be a mess.
It's going to be a mess. And look, I mean, you know, there's going to be enough. Okay. So you can look at it two different ways. There are enough, decent Republicans, or to rephrase, Republicans that are in swing districts that will not let Trump go completely crazy, but they'll go along to go along. And so, and Democrats, there's Democrats that are in swing districts that they will fall in line with Trump on some things like immigration. What it really means is that the margin is too slim for them to get anything done, really. And the Republicans will fight amongst each other.
But still, if you're in, you don't think that the Republicans will, the margin isn't slim enough that they will get things done. Like, it's Republican trifecta. So I think they try to figure out how to get rid of the
Obamacare?
The 60 vote.
Oh, right. Filibuster.
Mm-hmm. And then egg on our face.
Yeah.
You know, like, they'll do all the things that we say that we care about government too much to do. We care about the majority too much to do. And they'll do all of it. They'll do it. And so give me some thoughts. I know you have thoughts on what you think that they're going to do.
Well, I think the first thing that's going to happen is this they'll start the mass deportation. And I think that this is going to be this is the hill that they're going to die on. Because they know that they failed with the wall, and they absolutely believe this is how they won. And if I had to criticize, and we all know that I have very few criticisms for the way Kamala Harris ran her campaign. We all know that. I've said it often. But if I had one, I would have done more about the border. Now, and the reason why I said that is because, in my opinion, Joe Biden, the Biden administration, had a pretty good record on that. But they really didn't talk about it. And we could sit here and say why we think they wouldn't talk about it. But I think that Trump and them think that's how they won.
Yeah, I this is not a devil's advocate moment, but here's what I wonder, and it's worth thinking about. What do people believe that? And that's Rusty. Hey, Rusty, how's it going? I love that the dogs are in. King just came in here, but I couldn't get him. He wanted to play. But what do you think that? Do you think that? Here's what I think.
Okay.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that the majority of the voters, and it's played out, but believe us on our economic policy. I don't believe so. They believe us on our immigration policy. So we could have pushed this stuff really hard and said, you know, here's what we believe. But I think fundamentally we have to figure out if the electorate that we needed to move to us would believe us on it.
Right.
And I don't think they do right now.
No.
I think Democrats, do we believe that you're going to help us on women's rights, women's choice, this, that? Yes, we do, but it's not enough.
Right.
But whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? There's a realism of we could have done this, we should have done this, but if we would have done that and could have done that, would it be believable to the electorate? And how do we how do we make it believable?
Right. Now, I do think that some of this is a Trumpism or a Trump effect. So, you know, I remember when Trump in 2020 was like, hey, you know, if Biden's elected, the crash, the stock market's going to crash. Well, it didn't. So there is this, I think it's baked in. And I think
Trump I don't know if you saw. I mean, the stock market took off on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's in the same spot yet. And I wouldn't say that was because of Trump. I would say it's post-election. Like, just no, people will say the president doesn't matter. But that also goes to prove that the only people he has to worry about are either himself or...
Right. And I agree. I believe you, and I totally agree that I don't think that people generally trust us on the economy. Now, but I also think that that's some sort of weird justification / excuse. But back to immigration. And this is where I get my backup, frankly, when it comes to, because, you know, we do know that Latino men turned out for Trump in ways they never had. And I know, and you know, Jess, that, you know, over the years, the Democrats have spent a lot of political capital trying to appeal to Latinos in this country with zero results, in my opinion. And I think what's going to have to happen is, in my opinion, they always default back to their cultural, you know, kind of where they stand culturally. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, I mean, I think that white people do that too. Let's be honest. Like, you know, there's cultural conservatism, and it's not just political. Mm-mm. Where there's roles, including gender roles, which apply to a lot of different cultures, right?
Yes.
And that's where a lot of, we can go to the white women, just unbelievable to me. But I've said this for a long time.
Yeah.
You can't walk down the street and trust a white woman. You cannot. Yeah. I mean, generally, but their politics. Like, I could probably name a number of people that I know who probably showed up and voted for Trump. But they live in a safe neighborhood. They have a good school. They have a high tax base. They have either a successful career or a lot of help.
Yeah.
You know, their husband. And they're all probably decent moderates. Like, not exceptionally political, but also, you know, seeing the perspective of people who they don't even interact with.
Right. And see, that's, to me, is the, you know, and this has kind of been my mantra. And, you know, you and I have these same people in our lives, you know, but, you know, this fear, lack of a better word, of minorities, and these are people that rarely interact with minorities. Let's be honest.
I
know, honest. But
can we have a new word for it? Because I think our fear is more we are the minority. That's the fear. So we call them minorities, but the reality is probably the folks who are voting against it. It are the white people are now moving into the minority situation. They do not like it, you know. Or you're talking about people who are mixed race, or, you know,
right, but.
New immigrants or whatever. I feel like there's just, because I don't know what the population is, but it's shifting very fast, right?
Well, and but not these folks that are so scared. In my opinion, from my experiences, the folks that are terrified of this, you know, because the replacement theory is, they don't, there's not a lot of immigrants in their communities. You know, and I mean.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Well, I was having this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine who is Black, and she kind of had the perspective too. She's like, we've seen this before, the Black community. This is like, I mean, we see this all the time, right? I think some of the things that you don't necessarily see is like the blatantness in, you know, these areas. But you're right. You have to ask yourself how much you interact with people who don't look like you, who are not white. How many times do you have people who aren't like you come to your house?
Right.
How many times do you see people? I was visiting a friend in Chicago last summer, and I was telling her this. I was like, what I was shocked by is that It was a very white neighborhood. And I, you know, because I look at this all the time. I'm like, could I live here? Could we live here? How would this work? You know, less diverse than my neighborhood and my school. And my friend was telling me that there was a these really cool old buildings that they were turning into Section 8 housing. And her public school was up in arms about those kids coming to their school.
Yeah.
And this is probably, I would say, you know, a left-leaning neighborhood.
Yeah.
Of white people.
Yeah, this happened to, you know, I've told you this, Jess. So my,
I don't know what their politics are, to be honest with you, but.
So my neighborhood, very affluent, okay. The public school in our little neighborhood is less diverse than my kid's private school. Much less diverse. And
my public school, which we went to last year, or the neighborhood public school 3 blocks away from our house, is 60% non-white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is even, I would say, maybe it's 55%. Now we're at a public charter school, which is equal distance, a third, a third, a third, where we're talking a third black, a third Hispanic, a third white. So we have diversity here. Right? That I think on a level that people don't understand, but I agree with you. That's why like the school arguments are very complex.
Oh, very complex. And so back to the school argument for a minute in this neighborhood. Well, it's more of a housing thing. But so obviously there is a shortage of housing, affordable housing.
Oh, right.
In my area. And so there was this push by the county commission to what they call the missing middle, which means, quite frankly, that, you know, affordable housing. Okay. Now, in my neighborhood, you better not talk about that because that ain't popular. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say
you have a lot of hair signs in your neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Yep. This is as blue as it gets. But so, but my point is that before we start calling these folks that were opposing the missing middle, okay, racist, but you know, it's much more complex because, okay, you look at housing. So, all right, you have people that are saying, I moved to this neighborhood and I had to pony up to move to this neighborhood. And now you're telling me that they get a break? Where's my break?
Right.
And oh, by the way, now you're going to drive down the value of my house, which I'm going to have to sell one day. And I need to be, you know, you know what I mean? It's just multi-layered.
And they're all getting together, drinking wine, crying over the fact that there's going to be an abortion ban.
Yes.
But
yes,
not in my neighborhood.
Yes, not in your neighborhood. And so look, I'm not going to sit here and say that they don't have a point. They do have a point. And it has everything to do with, okay, it's about prices.
Sure, but can we take a little pain for each other? No.
But right. You know? No. That's done. And and they're not wrong. Okay, so the idea is in this little missing middle thing is that you build, you know, what do they call it? Multi-generational housing. So like you have, you know, in the middle of a single family home neighborhood, you have duplexes or whatever. And that does drive down property values. I don't know why.
Yeah, but you know, the issue in that area, which is why I'm not there anymore, is it's too expensive to get into housing. And
yes.
So like and if that's the American dream, the house, the picket fence, the everything, you know, this is part of the issue, right? We're going to protect our own. We're going to figure out how to do for ourselves. We've gotten this far. You know, they could do that too, but we digress. That's maybe another specific. Maybe we'll get a few other people on there to have this conversation because sometimes it's not disingenuous. I'm not saying that, but like there is a space, and I say this all the time. I walk out the front door. I'm a white woman.
Yeah,
I have a lens of raising a black child, but I don't walk out the door as a black person.
Right. No,
I feel like my kid is left safe. I felt that for a long time. And here's where I think I hate this, but here's where I think the idea is too, is like until COVID, white people didn't have that feeling that they couldn't keep their kids safe. until COVID. And that was scary. Now I think we're devolving into this where a lot of people don't feel like they are safe, but they probably are. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's certain people who are not. And, you know, it's just, and maybe if you're in that space where people felt like when they saw, you know, things change, they felt unsafe, and fear, as, you know, as Sarah talked about, drives a lot of people. And we, I think, you know, it's everybody's trying to do hot takes, and it's not even like, I hate that, but, you know, like how do we have these conversations where there's some reconciliation, where people can have real conversations about their fear and have real conversations about these sort of things and do it in a positive way that that changes hearts and minds. And I don't know that, because I don't think there's any like political solution to this.
No, right.
We can say you have to feel pain in order for you to change your ways. But is there a way to do that that says, hey, we're going to all discuss this and figure it out together? But I don't know if that's possible.
Right.
That takes a big, you know.
Now, as Democrats, let's do this real quick too, just real quick, because I think it's important, because as Democrats,
and maybe we're going out past our time, but
we're going way past our time, but we need to wrap up here in about 5 minutes. Cause Grace has got somewhere to go. But like, so the Supreme Court, so this is what Democrats do. Now they're putting all kinds of pressure on Sotomayor to
why? I don't know,
because they want Biden.
Oh, now to replace her. Oh, jeez.
Now,
how old is she?
70. And that's the only reason why they're targeting her, not a Kagan, because Kagan's been on the court longer, but she's younger. So
if she was 85, I'd say, okay, she's 70. I mean, let's be honest. Like, we don't want to be in the same position, but I get it. Like, but we could have stacked the courts and we didn't.
Well,
like, we could have done it. We didn't.
You know what, Jess? Well, we also, you know, with all due respect to RBG, and I mean, we all have all.
True.
She should have stepped down.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
Or Obama should have just said, sorry, Garland's in. Don't care what you think. Because I think the next year, these things that we preserve as,
as institutions
and belief systems, I don't know how we didn't think that was thrown out and done in 2016.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. We don't fight fire with fire. I mean.
No, we don't. And so, and again, I don't, you know, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I don't know. I do know that here's what's going to, and not Democrats, you know, now it's, everything's come down to Sotomayor and whether or not she retires. I mean, like, everything's.
I know.
And I'm like, no, that's not fair. It's kind of like blaming the field goal kicker when he misses the field goal at, you know, and he should have been put in that position in the first place.
Right.
Right.
Right. If you had a bad defense and a bad offense, it ain't the field goal kicker. Like,
right.
If you realize it, and I'm not saying that that's what happened to on the teams. If you just, you can't put this all, it's always the one thing, thing, you know,
and it's not that simple.
You're like, we could have codified abortion. We didn't. Mm-hmm. We talked about this last time. We could have created our own immigration system. We could have made sure our education system is much different. We could stop them from, you know, privatizing this stuff. We could do all these things, but we do this thing and then this thing. And then we say, oh, that's the problem.
And then we always.
And that's okay. But you know what? Let's be honest. Even though we have more women representation, even though we have now two black women going to the Senate, they don't think like this. White men don't have to think like this. Even if they're the good guys, I've seen it. And we're not hating on it. It's not the lens.
Yeah,
it has to be a major disruption.
Right.
And somebody with the political courage to go out there and say, oh, you know, and these things, we're playing by our rules now, and they're new rules, and we're going to disrupt the system like they've disrupted the system.
Right. And it was always like this calculation, well, let's let them look dysfunctional.
I know, which is what we're hoping happens now.
Right.
Right.
I mean, that's our only hope. And instead of talking about real issues, and
I'm about ready to just be like, let's start doing local races.
Yeah.
Let's just start doing state house.
Well, that's what
supervisors, mayors, city council members.
Well, that's what's going to take.
School board elections. Let's just go back to that.
Let's
hope eventually that it rises up to where it needs to rise up, because if people have progressive policies, maybe they will see the impact of it.
Right. And my husband says that all the time right now. He's like, This is the time while Trump is, because this is what happens. I mean, this is just inevitable. They overplay their hand because they think they can.
Yeah.
And so inevitably somebody gets affected that they didn't think was going to get affected, or they didn't think they were going to get affected, but they do. And so my point is that this is the time when you focus on the local stuff.
Yeah, but our political class, and maybe we do this for a minute and then leave it here mm-hmm. as a thought. Our political class of people who work in this world need to say, I'm not going to make $25 million off of this race.
Right, they do.
I'm going to go do some local stuff because they need my brain, and that's going to impact things in a big way. And
right.
We're going to just build back up and figure out how to get these local races funded so things can actually change.
Right.
And I'm not talking about, look, mayoral races in big cities, yes, yes. But I'm talking about small cities.
Yeah.
And there's no money in that, by the way.
Right.
We do this for a living. There's no money in that. You can make enough money to do your thing, but you're not going to sit in the big house doing that. And by the way, that has to be a change
you know what,
in mentality.
And you know what states we should start in is Kansas and Utah.
Yes.
And Iowa. Because you could tell, I mean, look, I think that this brand, they're conservatives, but Trump's brand, they don't like.
I agree.
They don't like that. And so, you know, they feel like they don't have an alternative. But I think Utah could be a blue state.
Would the choice community, I don't think the party, start running pro-choice women or pro-choice women Republicans in primaries against people and funding? Well, could we think about that? How about we run indies? Because look at Nebraska.
Yeah.
We almost beat Deb Fischer in a year that went very badly, even though they had the second district, you know, but went badly except that second district. He almost won.
Yeah.
And my understanding in that race is the Democratic Party went and endorsed him, and he said, no,
yeah,
I don't
he
want
did.
Your endorsement.
He did. He did.
You know what? What about Iowa? Like, we could probably beat
Joni
Ernst with an indie.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a true indie, you know, like, who understands the messaging. And there's other people who do
there
it. I don't know.
There was a Democrat in House race in Washington, Washington 3, and she refused to endorse Democrat running for re-election. She won. She refused to endorse Kamala.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah.
I guess we're just going to have to, like, we're going to have to put some, if this is important to us, people are going to have to put their pocketbooks aside. The consultants I'm talking about, potentially. They're going to have to put their litmus test aside.
Yes.
And they're going to have to say, okay, we're going to agree and disagree. We've worked for people. I mean, we've worked for people from, you know, Jim Webb to Bernie Sanders to all in between, you know, like conservatives. And we have a spectrum of our belief system. But I'm not saying we don't want to do winner take all. I think there has to be this different focus.
For sure. Okay, we got to wrap up.
Okay,
so,
sorry.
Yeah. So, okay, so we got a lot more to say about this, and we will. All right, just if you have questions or comments, us at thediveinpod@gmail. And
you'd like to get on women, particularly women, black women, Hispanic women, come on our podcast. We want to hear your voices.
Tell us what we're doing.
If
tell us what
afraid,
we don't know.
Yes, tell us what we don't know.
Yeah.
Because it's time to listen to you.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, email us thediveinpod@gmail.com.
Okay,
I just did it. gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. We're gonna stick around. We're not going anywhere. We just wanna give people voices.
Yes, we
and
do.
Hopefully we can do that. Thank you, Christian.
Thanks.
Oh, also bye, Ruby.
I know my dog's front and center today. Sorry. Bye.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.